Linda Lafferty, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me in, Roger.
When we did last speak about this deal with Amazon, there was some novelty to it. It was kind of a new thing to go with Amazon as opposed to Scribner or whoever else. What's your sense now?
I love Amazon Publishing. I can't say enough about them. And the reason probably is because they're publishing my book, but also because they are in constant contact with me. They are so supportive. The Amazon team supports me in everything I do, marketing, PR. I have a great editor with a great sense of humor, which is really important. In fact, I've got several editors, and I love them all.
So, the Drowning Guard. We're in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm. 1826.
1826 in the Ottoman Empire.
Right.
The opening scene is the main character from which the title comes. He is a guard mm-hmm. of the Sultaness.
Right. Esma Sultan.
And he drowns people for her.
He does.
And so it's a pretty stark and shocking opening. And then we go from there and it becomes anything but a blood and guts story, really.
Well, thank you. That's true. And I know that readers would probably think, oh, this sounds so dark. Well, it is dark, but it is also light. And it's the what I tried to do is to get to the reality and the psychology of this woman, Esma Sultan, and why she would take on these Christian lovers and then later have them drowned in the Bosphorus. There's a whole riddle there, and it's not all dark.
And she is a woman who sees the hierarchy of where people exist in her environment, and she is kind of a progressive in that sense, right? A feminist progressive one, making changes with some flaws. Oh, yeah, she drowns
her
lovers.
Absolutely. I like to think of her as one of the first feminists in the Ottoman Empire, maybe in the Muslim world, in that she would go and find these slaves. And there was a big slave market, of course, in Constantinople at that time. She would find these poor women, and she would bring them into her harem. And a harem at that time was really actually a status symbol. It showed that you had wealth. And so even eunuchs, wealthy eunuchs, would have their own harems. And she'd save these women. And I think that it really kind of turns that whole masochistic world on its head.
Because her aim, correct me if I'm wrong, was to be a woman and have a harem, as opposed to
absolutely
harems always associated with the men.
The historical record really showed that she did have her own harem. She had her own female orchestra. She had a stable of 2,000 horses, and the way she indulged herself was to help these women and to bring them into her palaces. I was reading Philip Mansell's book on Constantinople. And I got about, maybe halfway through, and I found the story of Esma Sultan. And I thought, oh, that's a novel. This is going to happen.
So what is the difference then between, if I were to pick up that book you mentioned, or let's say there was an official biography of her, and what you've done with the novel? What liberties do you have?
I really try to take all the historical facts I can possibly find. I do exhaustive research. But then, of course, this is a novel, so not everything is true.
I'm about halfway through the mm-hmm. book. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
By the way.
Thank you so much.
I'm not sure whether it was after you mention Scheherazade mm-hmm. or before it, but suddenly it was like, wait a minute, this is a sort of Scheherazade turned upside down.
It absolutely is. And I remember reading Richard Burton's 1001 Arabian Nights and just loving those stories. And of course, they weren't Turkish per se. But when I heard about Esma Sultan, I thought, wow, if she were to talk about her life, and she also had this Janissary who was listening as her confessor, I mean, basically that is the Scheherazade turned upside down, a gender reversal. And because she did have the power to drown all these men. And apparently she did.
The other thing, I guess, is when you write about horses, you...
My love.
Yes, I was going to say, you write from, like, you didn't have to research that. You know this stuff. And it comes, the imagery is really authentic.
Horses have been my life since I was a child. And I know that the Turkish riders were spectacular. They had to play Sirit and polo in order to keep themselves sharp for battle, and that was it was more than just a game. It was actually a military exercise. And I love horses, and I play polo myself, so I could write those scenes. And I've never played Sirit, but I'm willing to try. Except you have to duck.
Well, Linda, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, Roger, thank you.